This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to today's ILTA podcast entitled Beyond Zoom and Microsoft Teams. Have virtual hearings altered the fabric of dispute resolution? I'm your moderator today, Marlene Gebauer, Director of Knowledge Management, Locklord LLP. I am absolutely thrilled to be joined by our speakers. Judge Christopher Spryzinski, Circuit Judge, 18th Judicial Circuit, Florida. Richard Howell, Partner, Jackson Walker, LLP. Jeremy Cooper, Senior Trial Consultant, Paul Hastings. Welcome, Judge Spryzinski, Richard, and Jeremy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're going to just dive right in. What would you say are the most significant changes to the hearing and trial process caused by online access, both good and bad?
Well, I can offer a little bit of a perspective from the judicial side of things. So I was actually just recently appointed by Governor DeSantis in July of this year. So during the actual pandemic, I had about a seven-person family law practice, kind of exclusively working in high-asset divorce. And the good thing I think that has come out of this is forcing lawyers to be prepared and organized with having to have materials ahead of time and well ahead of time so that everyone can accommodate the technology. We're finding that the typical things or last minute surprises that you'd see at a trial or a hearing are really not happening as much as they typically would happen. And that has spilled over into my role as a judge, seeing that lawyers are much more prepared. I also am seeing that folks are using technology to improve their practices dramatically with this onset of virtual hearings. I'm on a split bench here in Seminole County, Florida. I have about 1,500 circuit civil cases and about 1,500 family cases. And one of the great things that's happened is everyone's adopted bait stamping. I used bait stamping, you know, even before the pandemic. It makes our clerks' jobs a lot easier. It makes the judge's job a lot easier as far as knowing what folks are looking at and seeing those technologies now spill into not just those complex cases, but your bread and butter divorce cases or your simple negligence cases has really, really been outstanding and has kept the judiciary a lot more efficient.
I would say that I agree with everything Judge Spryzinski said. I think the technology use has improved. I think preparation has improved. From my perspective as a trial lawyer, a couple of things that I've seen are that in-house counsel like it a lot. They like the ability to attend a hearing via Zoom in Texas in the morning and attend a hearing in New York via Zoom in the afternoon without having to lose a day or a day and a half to travel to be at a hearing for an hour. And as a trial lawyer, I have enjoyed it a lot, particularly because you can have the video screen active, an outline for a witness active, the exhibit that you're going to use next ready to go, as well as a chat function so that my other partners or associates and I can coordinate with each other, or if something was missed or somebody needs a follow-up, you're getting it silently through the chat rather than passing post-it notes, making some sort of obvious reaction. And the final thing I'll say is I love impeachment through the online trial process. If I'm taking a witness and they answer differently in a material way when I'm talking with them, I can immediately click share screen and I have the highlighted deposition transcript right in front of them, in front of the judge. And I feel like the judge, at least in the two bench trials that I've had, as well as another hearing. But when I've used the impeachment, the judge is already looking at the screen and they're paying close attention, I think, to what the witness is doing and what I'm doing, I hope. And when they see the transcript of the deposition pop up, they're immediately reading it in a way that might be lost in a busy courtroom that might have other distractions.
I think Richard's absolutely on point. One of the things that I love to do in private practice in the age of COVID was I use demonstratives a lot more. So in my practice in Florida, you're required to file financial affidavits in your family law cases. And in cross-examination and for purposes of impeachment, I would put that financial affidavit next to a blank Excel sheet and basically go through what am I deducting, what am I adding back. And so you have real-time focus and the judge is looking at your screen. Really, there's very little, we're focused on what's being presented right there. We're in a real courtroom or a live situation. You may not necessarily be paying attention to that document. You got folks pinging you on your computer. My attention's laser focused on what's being presented. So Richard's absolutely right.
Okay, well, let's move into some of the technical issues. So, you know, I know we're all familiar. There's certainly technical challenges with any online experience. What are some that are particular to online hearings and trials? And Jeremy, if you don't mind, we'll start with you.
Sure. Some of the things that I've noticed was something we just experienced just now. People disconnecting and losing connection. This is a Wi-Fi community, meaning everyone's on Wi-Fi. And so people will drop indiscriminately, and then you'll need to wait, whether it be the court reporter, or it may be the witness or the judge. And so we'll have to wait and then get things restarted. So that's one of the issues. Most of our teams are pretty smart, especially our IP teams at my firm. And we hardwire everything. Even when it's hardwired, and what I mean by hardwired, I'll give an example. We have a hardwired USB mic, lapel
mic. Just so you know, he's on a USB mic. He's showing us.
USB, right, USB lapel mic. And so we'll have it hardwired and then have the network wired too. So everyone's hardwired with an Ethernet cable, and still there may be glitches. And so you have to be ready for those things and then just adjust on the fly. Most of the times the judges and judge, you'll know, they're very, very accommodating, and they're understanding, and they'll say, hey, okay, we'll just take a 5-minute break and get things back rolling, and we'll just keep rolling. But obviously you can imagine that can be up and down. Some people will get a little flustered.
Yeah. How does that work from the judicial and the attorney side?
Well, from the judicial side, I've got to build in extra time for those technical snafus, if you will, into my calendar. So right before this, I'm actually doing a virtual family trial right now. And even though we're scheduled to start at 9 o'clock, we're not starting until 9:30. We need to make sure everyone is using their tools correctly. What witnesses do we have in our virtual lobby? The rules of sequestration become a little bit more difficult based on the tool that you're using. And inevitably folks don't necessarily practice, you know, we use Microsoft Teams in my circuit. I much prefer Zoom. Zoom is a much better tool, at least from my private practice. But I, for example, I can't, if someone invokes the rule, I can't just simply put someone back in the digital lobby. I got to take the time to say, do we have contact information for this person, or are we going to have this person log back in a particular time? So my docket management, I got to build in at least an hour during the day to account for those snafus.
From my perspective, most of the technical challenges that I saw occurred in the first 6 months. Many people were not very well suited or prepared to do online trials or hearings between, let's say, March and September of last year. I think people have you know, bought whatever equipment they need or done more to address those technical challenges. We had a trial that was, court was in Austin. We had attorneys in 5 different places in Houston, Austin, and Florida. We had witnesses in Houston, Austin, Michigan, Washington, D.C., and North Carolina, which was great. I mean, that would to have the expense of that, to have everyone in Austin for a week would have been tremendous, and we saved that. And during the entire week-long trial, we lost someone once. One of my colleagues lost audio for about half a day. Unfortunately, it happened while one of the witnesses he was going to present was on the stand. And so, you know, we kind of worked with it on the fly through the chat function, agreed who was going to take his witness. And, you know, he was able to get the issue sorted out later that day. But, you know, by and large, I have not seen the same kind of technical issues or challenges since, let's say, September or October of last year.
That's certainly good to know. But what about ethical issues? So, you know, approvals to host, or, you know, whatever the rules of engagement are for the hearing. What do you have to consider, and how do you ensure everyone's behaving appropriately?
You know, I'd like to jump in there. I hosted for the first time. It was just a few weeks ago, a mediation. And we were party. My firm was party in this mediation. And so obviously I thought, and my bosses thought, there may be some type of a conflict. And so we did not first want to just jump in there and say, yes, we'll do it. But the judge wanted us to actually host the actual mediation. So we did, but we had our OGC internally created a document that both sides, both parties signed, stating, yes, Paul Hastings will will actually host this mediation. There are no, even if someone gets pushed into the wrong breakout room or the wrong room, there won't be anything. I don't want to use the wrong word, but term like spoilation. There's no bad faith in this. That's what we're pretty much saying. And so it went off without a hitch. The judge was able to move in and out of breakout rooms to work with the teams. And it went really well. The judge was very pleased. So it works.
This is certainly one of the biggest issues that I struggle with now that I'm in the judiciary. We've had witnesses using scripts in my hearings previously. We've had witnesses referring to documents without their recollection needing to be refreshed. In private practice, I have an extreme example of this. We were in a hearing once and I was cross-examining a witness and the witness kept looking down and kept looking down. And we finally said, you know, ma'am, what are you looking at? And we said, hold up your phone. And that person was having a third party who was present texting them answers to questions. So it's a big, big issue. I know that some courts are actively addressing this. Florida is in the process of amending our rules of civil procedure to specifically address some of the technology things that we all know are going to be here to stay. And so it's definitely developing, but that is definitely the biggest concern I have from the judiciary's perspective.
Yeah, it's almost like all you can do is just take people's word for it.
Well, we do a little intro. So, you know, whenever I swear a witness in, I have them actually turn their camera around. I want to see no one's in the room with them. We make sure that there's no documents in front of them. So, you know, that does add time to the proceedings, but it helps the lawyers make sure that when there's being questions asked, the witnesses are answering based on their own information and belief.
Richard, what have you experienced?
We handled it in much the same way that Judge Przinski suggested, which is having an agreement with opposing counsel before a deposition starts or before a witness testifies in a hearing or in trial. And we want to make sure that there's no one else in the room with them. We want to make sure they are not looking at any outline or document that's not, you know, disclosed to anyone else. So for example, for expert witnesses, we agreed in a couple of cases that they could have their expert report with them. But we don't want any sort of text or online or chat communication going on with a witness during a deposition or during trial. You know, and when we've had those agreements, I've only had one instance where that was not followed. There was a witness who was doing poorly. We came back from a break and she kept looking to the side. And you know, the nice thing about Zoom is you have all of your focus on someone's face and the eyes tell a lot. And I think judges notice that. I think, you know, other counsel notice that. And so what was a huge concern, I feel like, is less of one. And maybe, you know, maybe it's happening and I'm just not aware of it. But I feel like, you know, people want to kind of do unto others. And I don't think that we have a situation where we want to kind of facilitate or promote kind of cheating, which I think is what this would amount to.
Yeah, I mean, it seems you mentioned the laser focus, because in a courtroom, you know, you're focused on a lot of different things all at once. And here, you know, there's a lot less of that. So in that vein, does the non-legal prep work differ at all? You know, so if you're presenting at trial, maybe it's more like a theater in terms of your delivery, but online it's more like television. So, you know, you have to worry about things like your background and your lighting. And, you know, I'm aware of people who actually take classes to learn about, you know, where to look at the camera and how to move, you know, things that perhaps, you know, a broadcast journalist or, you know, a social media influencer would learn. So how has this changed for you?
Well, I jump in. Well, I'll give this as an example. We had a trial just a few months ago. And one of the big partners stated, they called it a rig. Pretty much we had a podium with three monitors, a camera, two ring lights. It was a show. Trust me, a lapel mic, everything was hardwired in. And that was where the actual attorney who questioned the witness stood. Now, in the same room, conference room, we had other people on the Zoom with similar setups, but not as with the ring lights and all of that. Because whenever a witness was questioned, they were always at the quote unquote rig, because it was three monitors. So on the left side, you had the document repository. That's where documents were loaded for the judge and the witness to get to once the document exhibit 142, and then it will pop up on their left screen so they can open up the document and scroll through the document. On the right side screen was the actual hot seat person pulling up the document and calling out that paragraph and highlighting that line that needed to be identified. And then the middle screen was the Hollywood Squares. And so it's a big production, and it has been successful, but it's definitely different.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot. And the backdrop. I'm sorry, I forgot the backdrop. We usually use similar ones that are used by videographers, a gray backdrop. And that's interesting because, and then you have people who are very, very tall and then people who are very short. And so you have to adjust to all of that. And many firms have brought in, you know, people like you stated earlier, who can train them on how to posture your gesture, how to look directly into the camera, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. From the judiciary's perspective, one of the things that's really important is we lose the formality of the courtroom when we have this process. And so while I'm in my chambers today and you get to see my collection of plants and my, you know, Orlando Magic ball go magic, but that's not what happens in court. You know, I've got a very professional background with this seal of the state of Florida. Even though I really don't need to, I'm wearing my robe during the proceedings to try to build that same sort of formality. I was in a hearing last week, and the gentleman that I was asking questions to just broke out a vape and started vaping. And so you can lose, you definitely lose some of that formality because people are sitting on their couch or they're attending from their smartphone, you know, especially if I've got pro se folks in front of me. So we try really hard to build a professional presentation from the judiciary side. I have lighting right now, you know, going on in the courtroom, and I actually brought in my own camera and audio equipment. You know, our court budget's very, very tight, but we want to give folks the same experience that they have in court virtually as well.
I think the importance of formality is a good thing not to lose. I think judges pay attention to that and notice that. And the issue of having the backgrounds was something that our firm jumped on very early on and said, you know, you need to make sure that you don't have, you know, cats and dogs and everything running around, and, you know, use the virtual background since it's available. I think, Marlene, your analogy is a good one, that it is a little bit more like TV than you know, being on stage. However, I think reading is terrible. There are a few hearings that I've been to where someone is clearly reading off of a script, and it's just painful to watch. And it, you know, you can get disconnected from it in the same way you can get disconnected from, you know, bad broadcast journalism as well. The other thing I'll say is I'm 6'8". I lose all of the benefit of my height being on Zoom. So I like both forums, but they definitely have their advantages and disadvantages.
So I know that we're close to time, so I'll wrap up with the final question. Can each of you share one funny experience you've had online or at a trial? So, you know, any cat people or anything like that?
I'll start.
Okay, good. I was going to say, please.
So when I do regular hearing weeks, I do it cattle call fashion. One, so the lawyers kind of see what experience they're having digitally and what's effective and what's not. But two, we tend to get people done quicker and on with their day quicker. So we caught about 30 people into our virtual courtroom, and we mute everybody. And there was one young lady, she's probably in her 60s. She just did not know that she was not on mute, and she couldn't hear us. And so while she's waiting in our courtroom, she's actually taking a call and complaining about the birthday gift that her boyfriend had gotten her. This poor guy, because she was really upset with this birthday gift, and everyone could hear her. We're all trying to flag her to get her to pay attention. You know, hey, we can hear you. We can hear you. We finally, I hand wrote a sign saying, you know, Miss X, I can hear every word you're saying. She was very, very embarrassed, but everyone was very gracious with her after that. So,
except her boyfriend, probably.
Yeah. Sucks for him. Hopefully that proceeding wasn't recorded.
Jeez. Nope.
Should play it back for me. I guess I'll jump in. I don't know if I have a funny one or online one, but I'll say this is interesting. So we were in trial, I think it was last year, and we had the backdrop up. We had loans. Someone had a loan. A videographer had loaned us a backdrop. And so we had the backdrop connected to the ceiling. So it was connected to the ceiling. And I don't know if you all have seen those backdrops, but they have pretty much a harness on both the left side and right side. So, you know, after a day of, you know, messing around with it, trying to get it adjusted, one of the sides comes down. So I go to my trusty, yes, me as a guy, I go to my trusty sewing pin, and, you know, I had my own sew, and I sewed it myself. So
you bring your sewing kit.
Yes, my sewing kit.
That's awesome.
I keep one with me. You know, this is just, yeah, I'm a trial hot seat guy. You never know when what things will be needed. And so, yeah, that's fine.
That's great. I love both of those stories. You know, I had a couple of kind of little random things happen, but nothing as good as what Jeremy and the judge had to say. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much, audience, for tuning into today's podcast. And I want to extend my thanks to Judge Brzezinski, Richard, and Jeremy. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day, everybody. It was great to hear from you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Good seeing you all.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio. Get tuned in.